All right. Are you ready?
Set.
All right. Welcome, BattleTech fans, to another episode of the Renegade HPG podcast. My name is Travis, and today my guest is Timothy Seals, an electronic producer and composer from Perth, Australia. If you're not familiar with Timothy's work, just make your way over to his self-titled YouTube channel, where you'll find a multitude of original tracks and covers, including the project that first drew my attention to his work, A New Dawn. A New Dawn is a cover album for Jihan Huang's MechWarrior 2 video game soundtrack, and that cover has been recently expanded with new tracks in the Bread for War edition. We're going to be exploring the story behind those projects in today's conversations, but before I do, I want to also welcome my co-host for this episode, the great Daniel Bruins, creator of the MechWarrior Bulldogs, Freehat MechWarrior Story, MechWarrior Revival, and MechWarrior Origins. I asked Dan to join me today to not only secure his standing as this podcast's most frequent guest, but because in addition to his incredible animation and storytelling talents, he also just happens to be an aspiring composer himself. And I knew he would be a great ally to have in this conversation while exploring Timothy's catalog to lend a little bit of kind of expertise-focused questions. And before diving into the episode, I did want to give a quick shout out to Adolfo Fernandez, a fan of this channel that helped me connect with Timothy so we could actually record this conversation. So thanks real quick to Adolfo. I hope you enjoy this conversation. And with that, Timothy, thanks for joining us today and from the other side of the planet, no less.
Yeah, thanks, Travis. It's actually, 8 p.m. here, so it's getting dark and
and I just woke up. Yeah. My alarm worked. I was a little paranoid that it wouldn't, but we're here, and even Dan is a little earlier, so he's 7 a.m. on his side.
I'm dragging the sunrise up away from you.
Excellent. Well,
I'm pulling the sunrise, the sunset down, mate.
Exactly. So awesome. Yeah, so Timothy, your music been making appearances in my podcast videos probably since the beginning of the channel, just because I like to use a combination of your audio and Jihan's original MechWarrior 2 audio. It's kind of as an outro for all my stuff, and hopefully anybody that kind of listens and kind of, you know, piques their interest, they can check out the credits down at the bottom of each of those video descriptions. But I was able to find this stuff on Bandcamp, right? And okay, so people can kind of, as we go through, I'll put those links down below so you can kind of connect with Timothy's work, but you can download it, you know, and offer, I think it's a, you know, pay as you wish.
Look, you know, it's free, and you know, just get it. The idea is to just spread, you know, the lore and the game. And I never intended for it to be what it is, but you know how it is. You kind of do something because you're passionate, and it's just happened to connect with people, which is really a really positive thing. So thank you to everyone who's sent through, you know, emails and who've commented. I do read the comments. I am quite a quiet person, so I don't often comment back, but I do read occasionally the comment section. So yeah, it's very heartwarming to see everyone's comments, and just like it is such a positive vibe in the community. And and obviously thank you, Travis, for organizing this. It's great to be able to sort of say hi to everybody. And
No, it's been fun. I, you know, the MechWarrior 2 soundtrack has stayed with me for a long time. And I remember finding it in a drawer like 2 years ago and being like, oh my gosh, I got this. And computers have evolved to the point where they don't have DVD players, you know? Yeah. And so I went to Amazon, I bought a portable USB DVD player, plugged it in, you know, played it through. I love it. And and then I found, I don't know how, I probably, you know, YouTube algorithm, you know, pinged me with your cover. And I was like, this is great. And it was a Pyrolite, you know, the Pyrolite cover, you know, was the first one I stumbled on. And that's kind of like, you know, my go-to track, though. The kind of the drop in God or Damn Wrong, you know, has definitely kind of bumped up there as my favorite kind of moment, you know, for the MechWarrior 2 soundtrack. But no, I've gotten tons of enjoyment, you know, out of that music. And actually in the last couple episodes, I usually just did like a little clip of the music to kind of, you know, go through kind of the end things. And then I was like, this is too good to share. And so I've kind of like set it up so it kind of fades to your music, has a couple little like tags of, you know, of sponsors and supporters and other people I want to kind of give a shout out to. And then I just let it play the whole track, you know, with kind of your cover art there and try to get people there. And I've definitely been, you know, getting comments that like, oh, where's that music? What is that? So, it's been fun to play with and, you know, fun to kind of get more attention your way. But, take us a little bit behind kind of the inspiration and where that came from. You know, what's your experience with Night Warrior 2 and kind of what inspired you to kind of, you know, give that new kind of take on those tracks?
Yeah, I mean, Night Warrior 2 was kind of the game of my childhood. So, I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
When MechWarrior 2 came out. So I was just hooked on the game for one. But I think what really stood out was just the music and the quality of the music. I mean, it's kind of a shame. Like, there's a lot of composers from the 90s in video games that just don't really see the credit or don't get any credit for the, you know, the contribution that they've made to music. Like Jihan Huang, for example, I think he's in his 70s now. And
oh, is he really? Holy cow.
Yeah, he's quite old, I believe. And you know, it's just a shame that things have kind of dropped off, you know, and I guess what I was trying to do with this was reignite some of that passion for the early video game music, because it's kind of a bit of a love letter, I guess, to those guys, and just to say, you know, like, thank you. There are new composers who do listen to your work. And I think, like, as well, some of the orchestral synth exploration in those early games was quite groundbreaking. Like, you know, using the computer to write music, and you know, you're not relying on a 64-piece orchestra to produce the work. You're doing it on the computer, and those guys really were kind of the pioneers behind the electronic music movement as it is today. So it's one of those things where I was listening to the music a lot, and you kind of go through these phases where you're kind of listening to it a lot, and then you take a break for a couple of years, and then you kind of you listen to it again, and it feels like it's new. And those sorts of older games have all got really striking, you know, motifs and themes. And I can think of, you know, Halo for one, right? Yeah, just incredible by Martin O'Donnell, and Unreal Tournament. I mean, Michael Vandenbos is another one who just, he just doesn't get enough credit for the contribution he's made to the industry. Perfect Dark is another one. So David Klinick, amazing work. And obviously Skyrim as well by Jeremy Soule. So those sorts of... you know, obviously the Skyrim's a bit later, but yeah, the kind of early music was definitely a big inspiration for me growing up. So, and it's actually what kind of got me into writing music. So, I just thought I'd give it a shot, and awesome. Started writing covers, and it's kind of taken off from there. So.
Yeah, eight, nine's early to be playing MechWarrior 2. I was in my mid-teens, you know, and I wasn't a household that had lots of, you know, extra cash for video games and computer setups. And so I played most of it at my friend's house, you know, I had basically a surrogate father, you know, who I would spend summers with. And I just, you know, during the day while he was working, you know, I was playing MechWarrior 2. It was, spent so many hours playing that game and MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries a little bit after that, but I started to get ready for the college scene then. But yeah, and I had never imagined that Ji-hyung was that old, because everything I read, he was just an intern there, and they were just like, hey, do something with this, and he came back with the soundtrack, you know, the next day or the next couple of days later.
I might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure he was. He's in his 70s now, but maybe
it's crazy. But I do know he dropped off, you know, communication like 4 or 5 years ago, because I talked with Emil, who's an art of BattleTech, who we worked together on remastering the cartoon series, you know, and he's actually big into video games. We actually have a podcast recorded that I've kind of had in queue for a while to get edited, where we talked about kind of making the cartoons. But he's basically a video game historian, and we had an awesome conversation about the background of video games, and he knew that Ji-hyung had an online presence for a while, and then around in the mid 2010s kind of dropped off, which would make more sense if he was older. Mm-hmm. But that's crazy, because that would have meant
I googled him. He was born in 1950.
Whew.
So that puts him at 71.
Wow, that's crazy. Can you imagine just being like doing your first composition when you're in 40s? It gives me inspiration, I'm trying to change my career turn, right now at 40. I know, Dan, you've talked about, kind of in our earlier conversation, you had talked about kind of your next big purchase was trying to, just pick up, sound samples and tracks, and that's, I'm sure you've long picked that up since now. And, for people that don't know who have watched Bulldogs, Bruins did the animation, the animatic, but he also did the soundtrack, which I mean, the kind of the breadth of that skill kind of blows me away. So it's awesome. So, you've been able to put that into action, into motion. From you and kind of listening to Timothy's stuff, and someone who's getting into this, what are some ideas, thoughts, questions maybe in terms of, that process and what you're kind of learning and, and how to apply it?
Yeah. Actually, just like straight out to Timothy, I suppose, like, what's your like initial process for basically just like looking, like listening through this album and like putting the actual tracks together? Do you transpose that by ear, or did you like somehow manage to like find the MIDI files for everything around the internet somewhere?
I had a bit of a weird process. I'm actually an architect by day, so like the way we approach design is very similar to the way I approach music. Mm-hmm. So you kind of start off with a story, and you write to a story rather than creating individual elements. And I sort of approached the covers the same way, because what I didn't want to do was just redo what had already been done. I sort of wanted it to speak for itself, and it's almost like reinventing what they did, because I knew that there's no way you can top what was originally done,
right?
So you kind of you want to give it your own sort of musical flair and tell your own story at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think good remixes always have that kind of flair from the artist who's remixing, rather than them just trying to reproduce what's already been done. So mm-hmm. A lot of the synth work was reinterpreting elements from the particular tracks and rearranging them, sort of cutting and pasting bits and almost like trying to recreate some of the effects. So there's this quite interesting effect, which I don't know how they created it, but it sort of sounds like a skull cackling, which you can hear a lot through the soundtrack. So it was sort of like playing around with my own synths and trying to rebuild those sorts of elements in my own way, and I think just enjoying the process of almost trying to learn how they wrote the music when they did it. So obviously the technology's gotten better since they did it.
I picture like one working file for one track from like A New Dawn. It's like more data space than all of MechWarrior 2.
It pretty much is. Yeah. I mean, I've got the Summoner project, which was Arkham Bridge's cover. That I've got that open, and even that one with all the elements uses more than 100% of my CPU. So
yeah,
you can kind of imagine you basically have to create it as a whole, then package out each file separately, and then rebuild it back together.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the software I'm using, I think you can see some of it in the background. I've got Hollywood Strings, Hollywood Brass. I use the complete package, which is sort of there.
Okay.
And yeah, it's kind of Nexus. I use Nexus a lot, which you know, it's great for like building a foundation mix. So because it's very it doesn't use much CPU, whereas you know Hollywood Strings is very CPU intensive. So you kind of, the way I work is I'll usually write up a kind of draft mix using Nexus, and that way I can get everything in the composition.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can hear it all as in the composition without having to export it out as a WAV file.
Oh, nice.
And then once I'm sort of happy with how it's sounding in Nexus, I'll start to bring in the more commercial sounding VSTs, which, you know, this one here is quite incredible. They went and recorded a you know, a 64-piece orchestra, and
right.
you can turn off all the different instruments, you know, that you want. Oh. And be very kind of specific as to what you include in the mix, and that's kind of, you know, where we're sort of taking what they did and mm-hmm. adding more to it, and sort of revitalizing it to modern sort of industry standards is sort of what I was hoping to do. So
yeah, well, I know, so, yeah. I've
it's kind of nice to have that like really big sound and at the same time like very fine, like granular control of
yes
like each individual section.
That's what was incredible about Jihan and Gregory's work, was it was very kind of meticulous. Like there was a lot of, you know, they understood that they were working with you know, old computers that were not, they weren't old at the time, but like the constraints that they were working under were a lot harder than what I'm obviously working under. So they had to be really kind of meticulous in how they worked with the synths that they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the sound of the mix is so it's so different to anything I've heard, you know, like, and even still, like you can still listen to it now and just be like, this is, I don't know anything else that sounds like this, you know?
Well, that's like perfect lead into a question I had. Cause you know, I've gone on, you know, various media, and you look at these documentaries that go back into like animation and how Disney would animate and how they, you know, the different approach, you know, where they had to draw frame by frame and then how they could change perspective or, you know, frame a shot, you know, zoom in on a shot, move a point of view, you know, and it's just so in depth, you know, back then, or even like Star Wars special effects, you know, doing how they did special effects for the original Star Wars versus how they do it now with all mm-hmm. the technology. I'm curious, you know, looking back, you know, to what would have been early 90s when this is getting composed, you know, what was it, you know, what do you know that was, you know, what were they working with, you know, because you're talking about this, you know, you're drawing on all this memory from modern computers to kind of, you know, give a new spin on this. You know, do you have insight into what that process was, you know, for them back then, how they even got these sounds in the first place, you know, much less put them together?
It's all analog synths, all of it. I can tell from listening to it that it is analog. It's got that kind of, it just doesn't sound as artificial.
Right.
As some of the stuff that you get these days. Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was just them mucking around with analog racks and just kind of really getting into like the tactile nature. I mean, like guys like, you know, Joel Zimmerman, DeadMouse, he's probably sort of what I envisage Jian to have been doing at the time with analog. But yeah, look, I'm not sure what sort of audio interfaces they were using. Could have been Pro Tools maybe. But yeah, look, at the time it was, might have been all recorded individually and reassembled. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I think those sorts of, it's funny, those sorts of constraints is what made the soundtrack so unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that's, like, go ahead, Dan, sorry.
So, like, recently I've started listening to, there's this actual play podcast, like an RPG podcast called Friends at the Table. Right now they're running like a giant robot game that the host Austin Walker is basing on the aesthetics of BattleTech, right? Mm-hmm. And his like stated goal at the beginning of every episode is like, I want to present a universe of like robes that flow, screens that flicker, and buttons that click. So they mm-hmm. like really getting into the physical nature of interacting with a super future version of like old school 80s style machines. And I think there's something in those old MechWarrior soundtracks that retain now that you like you think about how that actual sound was made, that sort of like it matches that sort of aesthetic.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, like, have a listen to the original Terminator soundtrack.
Oh yeah,
by Brad Fidel, and that's very very similar to what like Gian and Gregory were doing. It's all analog, sort of, you know, recording directly from the hardware, not mm-hmm. going to software and compiling it using, you know, tape decks and stuff like that. That's sort of, you know, we've come a long way.
Yeah.
I'm picturing them in like a dark room with like Comstar robes and like doing seances as they're just like assembling these tape reels together. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. It's interesting your comments about kind of, you know, kind of losing something in the evolution, because it's something I focus on a lot. You know, Dan and I have talked a ton about, you know, illustration, you know, in addition to animation. And I do a lot of work through Gallery 3025, trying to kind of recruit more, you know, more illustrators into the genre. And I talk a lot about kind of how I feel like there's kind of been a loss of kind of soul in a lot of the you know, illustrations in the genre with the translation to digital from when it was painting, you know, when you had guys, you know, like Jim Holloway or Bruce Jensen, you know, where those were, you know, painted mediums to kind of the digital. And I've been pulling my hair out, you know, obviously I've been looking a lot, you know, pulling a lot of hair, but to try to kind of, you know, just, you know, scour kind of DeviantArt to try and find people that, you know, kind of have more of that kind of paint aesthetic to kind of recruit into the gallery to do some compositions, but it's tough, you know, so, so yeah, it's interesting to kind of hear that from the audio side as well, you know, it's kind of how, you know, that has, you know, you're kind of losing a little bit of that past and kind of the modern technology, you know. And I'm always fascinated by the question of kind of how do you, you know, is it something that's kind of lost to time, or is it something that's like a cycle where people will kind of realize that they're missing something and will figure out a way to kind of circle back and combine the two?
I think like the whole synth wave movement that we've got, actually it's happening right now, is that it's people wanting to rediscover, you know, what they lost in the past. And like, I'm just one of many people on YouTube who have sort of taken it upon themselves to recreate, you know, early games. Like, I know like Nilo Lecton he's done the whole Unreal Tournament soundtrack. He's just gone and rebuilt every single piece of music. And it's a great thing, because, you know, obviously the younger audience, that they're not going to play the game, but they understand the music and the quality of the music. And I think like, if like listening to these sorts of newer takes on the old music, gets them into the lore and into what the games were about, then that's a great thing, you know. It's introducing an entirely new audience. I mean, when I first started playing MechWarrior, I had no idea about the BattleTech universe. I had no idea about the lore, and it's almost like you're seeing it, like you're seeing this much of what the whole thing is, and it's great, because if it wasn't for that, I would never have looked into it and discovered more about the, you know, the whole universe.
Yeah. And that was a good one, because I remember there was so much lore hidden in there, and kind of their passages from the Remembrance, you know, and just kind of histories. I think, you know, MechWarrior 2, and I don't have an expansive experience with BattleTech video games, MechWarrior video games, but I feel like it was definitely the best in terms of reflecting the actual BattleTech universe in the video game medium. I think it was like a true homage, you know, set in the Refusal Wars, you know, with a lot of kind of history. A lot of the battles were kind of a direct translation, whereas they've been taking a little bit of liberty since then. But you know, obviously HBS BattleTech, having been produced by Jordan Weissman, you know, kind of brought that back in, and they were just like, they did kind of, what was it, the Emperor is like, I'll make it law, you know, and, you know, Weissman was just like, I'll make it canon, you know,
and I will and make built it canon.
I, you know, so many great memories of that. But Dan, you had said something, and Timothy, you know, you can kind of chime into this idea as well, but Dan has the animation side of things, but you had said something about kind of building off of the soundtrack, building kind of the story around the music. And I know that in, you know, Free Hets, you had a pre-established soundtrack, so you had Clint Mansell's Mass Effect 3,
I just
finished my playthrough of the Legendary Dish a couple weeks ago, and God, that game's so amazing. But so you had that, where you had the soundtrack, and you kind of, you know, what was the difference in terms of, you know, having a soundtrack that you were working with that was pre-made versus MechWarrior Bulldogs, where you know, you were able to create both, you know? So did in MechWarrior Bulldogs, what did it get flipped, where you were building the music to the animation, or does it kind of go hand in hand, where you have, you know, kind of something in mind for, you know, a change of tempo in the music, and you kind of sculpt the story around it? You know, how does that work?
In my experience, and for the projects that I've done so far, what I do is I actually like take whatever sort of soundtrack I'm working with, and I physically put it into the animation timeline and sort of animate to that. And so I had actually had what became eventually the Bulldog soundtrack, just like lying around in my hard drive, that had been made for like a event in 2019 for like an RPG group that I'm part of. They're holding like a hostage situation, sort of a scenario, and you had characters on both sides of the wall trying to like coordinate with one another. So that was really just like a thing that I had put together to just throw out to that group, to be like, hey, this is kind of the tone we're going for, right? And people go, yeah, that's great, cool. Yeah. So I just had those sounds lying around. I had the structure of that piece sort of just in place. Mm-hmm. This was before I had upgraded the sound system that I'm using right now. So basically the whole thing was built using like old school Apple GarageBand chiptune sort of like, it was not great, but like it was functional. Put that into the timeline, animated and timed the entire animation to that, and then dug up the old working file, threw it into in my case, I'm now using Logic Pro with a whole bunch of Kontakt VSTs thrown into there. Basically, just like load in the MIDI files, relink the music with my own sort of collection of live sampled instruments, and basically like good to go. I think just like, again, circling back to the idea of getting bits of like granular detail and almost like losing a little bit of polish and control in like the older soundtracks. I feel like in some cases that we're starting to come back to that specifically in the realms of like high quality, high file size music, especially with like John Everest's score for the BattleTech turn-based game. Because, and I think this is going to, like, I might make some enemies here, but pre-recorded sampled instrument packs, no matter how good they are never going to match the texture and quality of live performers. So what John Everest actually did was he sort of sketched out his soundtrack, and I believe he actually went and he like hired an orchestra for a day, and they just played the score, and they recorded like, and you get bits when you have live players in that environment of like tonality has changed very slightly, like the temperature of the room throws instruments off in different directions. People like are like shifting around in their chairs. There's a great bit from I kid you not. John Williams' score for Attack of the Clones, where there's this like oboe soloist playing this lovely little like lyrical line, and you can hear the valves clicking. It's so great. I think now that we are able to store like high resolution file images or file sizes into both interactive and non-interactive media, we're able to. Again, regain that bit of like real world texture and humanity, and obviously, like it, when we're able to combine both of those techniques into like one sort of like master project, it's like real magic can happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you guys, you know, is that something that you guys would be able to do? You know, are you kind of, is your experience kind of stuck in kind of piecing together the sounds, or do you have the ability to, and I'm coming from a completely layperson's, you know, perspective asking this question, but can you write that music? Like, is that something that you can put on a paper that you would be able to take your track, write it down, and then give it to an orchestra to say, okay, let's play this?
So the way it works normally is you actually send your music to someone to write for the orchestra, unless you are composing directly for the orchestra. Mm-hmm. So Hans Zimmer, for example, I think he actually has, he writes like a kind of a suite of music, and that then gets sent to someone to write. And then that obviously gets translated into the orchestral mix.
He's got like a whole like factory of staff just like working on like producing all of his samples and getting everything arranged for him, getting like the best coffee in town all the time, that kind of thing.
It's funny, one of Hollywood's great sound mixers actually lives in Perth, so I've actually had the pleasure of being in his mixing studio. And he's got like an atomic clock, which makes like his internet is one like perfect in terms of connection to the Disney satellite. And he has Hans Zimmer on a conference call, and he's just sitting in his studio in Perth. So we're really living in a global sort of society now where things are just, you know, doesn't matter where you live anymore, does it?
No kidding. Yeah, we're getting there.
Just calling up Hans Zimmer for a Zoom meeting. That has to be terrifying.
I'm
used to it. Well, we got Clint Mansell to see one of my early Instagram posts for Bruins. I remember kind of sending him a little screen image being like, hey, Clint liked this thing that I shared from Free Hit.
Was also terrifying.
you think that if I'm sure it's a budget limitation, but you think that the fact that it does sound so much better, you know, in analog, you know, that even if it is getting produced digitally for, you know, so much of the modern production, that it wouldn't be regular practice to go back and have it recorded, you know, before plugging into a movie per se. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much, you know, how often that really happens. Is it just like, you know, you know, Hans Zimmer and a couple other composers. You know, obviously John Williams just does it straight, you know, through the orchestra. But is that something that is just, you think that's a budget thing? Do you think just people don't appreciate it enough to kind of force that translation?
I think it's absolutely a budget thing.
Hmm.
I think most composers would, if they had the option, they would offer.
If you're paying like a full suite of like 60 to 100 professional musicians at the top of their field, to work for an entire day for you at, you know, at the least.
It's funny. It speaks to where video games have evolved as an industry, that we're starting to see the majority of AAA games being orchestral, you know, recordings.
Yeah,
the whole thing. You know, like it's all the Modern Warfare games now have got amazing orchestral suites. It's good to see.
Yeah,
definitely.
But I think, like, you know, at the same time, like things, you know, Valheim's a great sort of indie soundtrack, which is, I'm not sure how he's produced it, but if you have a chance to listen to that one, that's... Mm-hmm.
Which one was that, Timothy?
Valheim.
Okay.
The new game that's come out is quite a nice sort of indie cello sort of soundtrack, which complements the game quite nicely. And it's so you've got this kind of dichotomy between what's going on with the AAA games and the indie games are sort of reminiscent of, you know, what Jihan was doing back in 1995. You know, it's that kind of quality to it. So
the indie games are starting to, like, to have soundtracks that resemble indie music.
Exactly.
Because you know at least like four or five of the devs in the actual studio just like run down to the local independent brewery and just have like play banjo in a Mumford Band on Fridays. You know that's happening.
Awesome. So what you know, for your work, Timothy, has it just been all kind of amateur stuff you've been doing on the side? Have you had a chance to kind of venture into any official projects? You know, obviously architecture is kind of, you know, the time user.
Yeah. So it's becoming more of a job, to be honest. I'm actually working on, I'm working on two projects at the moment. One of them is quite a new, it's a game which I'm not sure if you guys are familiar much with cryptocurrency, but it's in the blockchain world.
Okay.
It's called Influence, and so I'm starting to write music for that. I've already written music for the trailer, it's kind of an interesting project because the process is obviously driven by the community. Mm-hmm. It's a very community driven project. And so I'm really enjoying just getting into more of, like, you know, film and game work. Cause I've done films in the past and I guess it's just continuing to build up my own suite of music and as long as people enjoy listening, then I'll keep making it, you know?
Definitely.
Have there been any, like, as you've been making this transition, has any aspect of that production process surprised you in any way?
I think what surprises you the most is when you write for a really well thought out story, and how much easier it is to write for a well thought out, you know, video game story. So if I know in advance that there's a lore and a backstory to what I'm writing for, I will sign on, because it's just such an easier process, because the soul of the game is the lore and the music, and they speak to one another. So I think that's why MechWarrior and BattleTech are so successful is just the solid foundation, you know, that they're on. So,
yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And yep. a lot of the production art that I've done, it every time you have a director that knows what they want, knows what they're going for, and then like basically points you in a specific direction and says, just go nuts in this yep. in this way. Yeah, it's almost universally absolutely fantastic to work on projects like that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Sorry, go ahead, Travis.
No, and you had commented earlier in the cast, Timothy, about kind of when you were settling down even to do the covers, you know, of having kind of like a story in mind when you do that. And so, you know, which was interesting to me, you know, kind of building a story around the track before kind of revisiting the track, you know, maybe talk a little bit about kind of what those stories were, kind of how we came up with them and how it played into the production.
I started off reading some of the lore, particularly relating to, you know, obviously like the war and Kerensky and all of that. And it's kind of just sort of looking at what was happening and trying to visualize. It's kind of like Star Wars in a way, where you've got this, you know, the three films that happen. You obviously got the first three and then the next three, and the next three are sort of before the first three.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like writing music for those ones. And then that informs what's happening in MechWarrior in a way. And I guess I started off writing music, which was my own composition. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of started to feed its way into the cover music. So there are moments that in the mix where I sort of bring in some of that original composition.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a process of enjoying the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff on the channel outside of just BattleTech too. Kind of, what are some of the other inspirations that you've kind of, you know, pursued in terms of, you know, covers or even there's some original tracks on there too. So maybe kind of, you know, what's a favorite or two that, that you've done that you'd like people to kind of to pull out of the mix, pull out of the catalog.
Yeah, I mean, so back when Unreal Tournament 4 was coming out. I was on the forums at the time, and we were all sort of, there was a lot of composers writing music for the game, and it was still in development. So we were working closely with the developers at the time. Unfortunately, the game got cancelled because of Fortnite. So Fortnite.
Seriously?
A bit unfortunate, but it was looking quite interesting for a while there, and then obviously Fortnite took off and all the devs at Epic Games made the decision to just go 100% in on Fortnite. So,
or the decision was made for them.
unfortunately, a lot of the music, and there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of quality stuff that was written, will sort of never see the light of day, but I did release one or two tracks which were sort of progress work on that one. One of them was Chasing Voids, which was sort of paying homage to Michael Vandenbos and a bit of a drum and bass sort of influenced piece of music. So yeah, I don't know if you wanted to play that one, but
yeah, I'll play it in the background if you want to talk about it before we go. But
yeah, so it's pretty sort of liquid drum and bass influence with orchestral elements. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, it's just going back to the electronic origin of the music and also the fun of playing video games and, you know...
Is that like electronic sound, synth sound? Is that sort of your comfort zone, sort of home base?
I think it is. I think I started off. I actually started off on forums called it's a forum called Section Z. Mm. This was this is back in like 2010, and it was a community of aspiring producers who, you know, all around the world, and it was just a good place to connect. I think Deadmau5 is on there as well, so it was kind of learning from other people and learning through them, and having good conversations, and just enjoying like the process of writing music, because a lot of the time you will write stuff and just decide not to go ahead with it. Mm-hmm. And you don't, and it's funny, like some of those things you just rediscover later down the track, and you're like, oh, I can use some of that in this one, or yeah. So it's kind of it's that sort of process of just constantly creating and enjoying the process of creation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a term that you kind of throw out in the when you're talking about it called of lossless quality. What is lossless? What does that mean?
So it's to do with sample rate, and also just when you export something, it basically compresses the file. So if you actually zoom, if you look at an audio file,
mm-hmm.
a waveform, if you zoom in, there's basically steps. You can see, you'll be able to see steps in the file, and the compression down to like 256 or something like that. If I don't know if you've heard those sorts of compression terms, but what that basically is doing is it's compressing the file into 256 steps.
Mm-hmm.
So modern music, you know, it's getting to the point where the music's pretty high fidelity, but it's not completely lossless. So yeah, with it used to be an issue with older music where you would hear music and it would sound fuzzy, and you're like, why does it sound fuzzy? And it's because of the compression that they've used to fit it onto a CD is effectively,
gotcha,
you know, what they were doing. So yeah, anyway, like my ones, it's up on Bandcamp, it's in lossless. If you've got really good headphones, you should be able to pick the difference.
Yeah.
But I think, like, if you know, the standard listener, it's not something that I think they will notice or kind of know what to look out for and when they're listening to the mix.
Is it kind of the difference when people talk about listening to a vinyl versus a CD? Is that kind of
pretty much thing? Yeah. So vinyl's more analog,
mm-hmm.
CD's digital. So the vinyl's, you know, it's a different process of how the music's converted from the, you know, the media into the speaker.
Right.
And I think, yeah, it does sound better.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, look, the reality is, you know, people aren't really, unless they're audiophiles, they're not going to be able to distinguish the difference, right, between the two.
Yeah.
So
it's like TV, when I'm buying my TV and they're like, this is the 4K HD and this is the 2K. And I'm like, looks the same to me.
Yeah, we can't really make much of a difference past like 1080 or something of that sort.
Yeah, definitely. It was funny insight from the other side when I was doing the cartoon and I was, you know, exporting the files. It basically just gave me a drop list of, do you want it in 2K or 4K, and it looked the exact same. So I was like, do whatever. But I did it in the higher one just so it could be seen on a bigger screen.
Yep.
So what's upcoming? You know, Timothy, you got it. You know, what's the new projects and
I've got obviously Influences. I'm still in talks with the devs at the moment, but that's a really exciting project. Looking at writing some more MechWarrior music. I've actually got three albums which are unfinished.
Okay.
So there's a bit to do.
Uh-huh.
And I also do, like, one of those albums is a drum and bass inspired piece of music. And I'm hoping it's more of like a storytelling kind of album where it's, okay, you know, immersive. You sort of listen to it and it kind of runs all the way through. And Influence is taking up a lot of time. And if you go to their website, you'll be able to see the trailer that we've finished, and that's all available up on YouTube. So just go Influence Eth and have a look, see if you like it.
Awesome.
And yeah, like, just keep writing some music. And if you guys have any ideas as to things to do in terms of MechWarrior, then feel free to send me an email, and I'll make sure to check them. So
awesome. Well, now we got these two creative talents, kind of introduced. So maybe there's a collaboration in the future I could see, but that would be awesome. Yep. Bruins, okay. Anything I missed? Anything certainly from the technical side, that you had a question that you wanted to throw out?
Maybe not so much technical side as like a process side, if it's all right to just field. Like, how do you sort of approach composition, Timothy? Do you do like a layers based sort of approach, or do you sort of like map everything out in like one instrument and then split things off into individual parts?
Yeah, so normally what I'll do is start off with piano. So MIDI keyboard. And I'll usually work with a foundation note structure, so chords that are quite simple, and expand from there and add more and more, and maybe peel it back and then add more. So it's kind of a bit of a spontaneous way of doing things. And it's usually a result of like listening or reading source material, and then sort of, well, what is this? Is this a sad, more sort of melancholy kind of story, or is it something a bit more bombastic? Is it like a wartime sort of thing? Like those kind of elements start to feed their way into the composition. It's just kind of visualizing it in your own head before you put it down onto the screen. It's hard to explain. It's just the act of creating.
Yeah.
And once you've got like, so the MIDI keyboard translates directly into the software. So I'll record myself playing and then sort of start to fine tune it. And then I start to draw in or layer in more information in the MIDI. I hope that answers the question.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very much like what, not to like go off on that bit, but that's sort of how I've found it is possible to kind of avoid the natural inclination of like, I can just keep adding more instruments and more interesting sounds, just layer things over and eventually just end up with a muddled mess.
Yeah. And some things happen when you're playing it live, there's little inconsistencies, and they're almost like mistakes that happen as you were saying.
Little accidents.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just subtle things which, people won't, realize when they listen to it, but it's something that it definitely benefits from having in the mix. Mm-hmm.
It's there, and it's there, and then hopefully it'll actually come across as having some like a richer quality because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm curious, in talking about Freehat before, you've mentioned kind of, almost wanting to kind of replace the track, and I was a big no vote on that just because, I have such an emotional investment in Mass Effect 3, and that helped tie me into Freehat. But, when you're doing that, do you have a challenge or difficulty in terms of kind of separating yourself from preconceptions? So if you were to go back into Freehat and compose music for it, would would it be a struggle trying to separate that story from the music that I'd used before, from Clint's music, and trying to start from scratch and kind of build your own, or is it something that you can compartmentalize and go? Because there's definitely, for me and my creative process and things I do for work, there are ways in which I'm very good at separating and compartmentalizing and dealing with things in their own kind of universe, and other ways where it's just like I can't shed the influence of something else, that's tied to and related to one thing if I'm trying to focus on that other thing.
Well, for Freehat specifically, I'm not sure if I had like the emotional, like musical emotional maturity at the time that I was actually using that track to recreate the ideas or themes that that like Clint Mansell, like the actual master, conveyed with a couple of piano notes and a big old tuba. But what I think I would do specifically with Freehat, and something that I want to do in another like film project idea that's been like floating around my head for like a year now, is go back in and maybe keep the pacing and the general chord structure, but retune the instruments and retune the actual like melodies and the way things are played and the shape of everything to more closely fit. Because the thing that I want to really nail down is that BattleTech is an extremely like diverse and like ethnically multicultural universe. I would want to like this is a film that takes place in the Free Rasselhag Republic, right? Mm-hmm. So like Scandinavian instruments, like a Nordic fiddle, big like Japanese koto drums, wood blocks, things like that. I would want to try to basically take that idea and turn it into like a Viking folk song sort of thing, which is actually something that, if we're talking about like going forward, that's something I've wanted to do for a while. There is there's an old, I think it's a Swedish folk song called Herr Manelig, which is a song about basically like about a troll calling to a prince and like tempting them to come off and like marry her, and she goes up and like lives, they live in the mountains or whatever. It's this like deep and slow and like haunting sort of song and melody. I want to, using like Viking instruments, recreate that in a BattleTech setting, but instead of a troll calling to like a prince, it's like an old Star League era mech saying, hey, you're a tech, right? You're not supposed to be one of these high-born warriors. Why don't you just climb into the cockpit, see what we can do? That sort of thing. And the mech is like calling to her, and that's sort of an idea that I've wanted to play with for a while. It's awesome. A theme that's in like Creative Commons, because it's like 1500 years old or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, talk more, man. If we can get the gallery to kind of support you more, I know Tex has you nailed in for a project, and but once he's done, you guys are done with that, we'll get more going your way. And you know, talking about kind of something that's stuck in your head, Timothy, last night when I kind of hopped on your YouTube channel to kind of listen to some other tracks, I saw like the third one you had was the one of Moby's tracks, God Moving Over the Face of the Waters. And it's funny, I have a story about that song where it was maybe like 8 years ago or so. I just, out of the blue, I started to get an echo of that song in my head, of the kind of melody of it, and of the crescendo. And it was completely out of context. And it was just stuck in my head for like 3 months. And it was kept playing in my head, and I could not remember where I had heard it from. And there would just be moments, you know, every couple of weeks where I would just obsess, and I would just be searching, or I would just sit there and be like, what is that? And I would be framing it in my head of the scene that was in. And finally I came to the fact that it was from Heat, from the movie Heat, you know, and it was that culminating scene at the end where they're at the airport, you know, and that's playing in the background, and that was such a visually distinct scene combined with this amazing music. And so, and that, all that was kind of stuck in my head, and it was kind of like just kind of me and my memory kind of muddling through until I could find it. And then finally I found it. I was like, oh, it was such a relief. And it was funny when I saw your cover of that track on there. It brought back that memory of that kind of 3 month long process of just obsessing over this clip of a tune, and
it's actually my search
to find it.
The reason I wrote that that cover was because I had the same experience. And so the way I did it was I actually wrote it all in reverse. And it's kind of like, oh, what is this? I swear I've heard this before.
Yeah.
And then it's at the break is where you where it starts to come in properly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and it's one of those moments like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, I know the one. You know, yeah. it's that sort of that was the approach behind that cover. Yeah. But it was sort of like, very similar process to what you were just describing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
It sounds like you have like a glass pane in your mind that's covered with grief, and you're slowly wiping it away and getting a clearer and clearer picture every time.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly.
Well, memory is a whole challenge for me. I have a weird memory that I struggle with, you know, in my day-to-day life. I'm extremely intuitive in terms of how I remember things. I just don't really remember hard data very well or facts. You know, I have someone like Bishop, you know, on the podcast who can just like pull out facts from the BattleTech universe like crazy. And I'm just like, you know, I just remember pictures, like, you know, like how I was going through the process of finding Moby's track. It was just like there was an impression, and I remember the feelings and the intuitions that I have around it. And then you're basically just trying to kind of restructure the specifics around those feelings is how my memory works.
Yeah. And like an aesthetic sort of memory.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I had gone into college actually to study physics, theoretical astrophysics specifically. And I got about 3 semesters in and realized that no matter how good my critical thinking and problem solving skills were, if I couldn't retain large amounts of data, it wasn't going to matter. Yep. And so I had to move on. I got up to general specific relativity, you know, in my advanced physics courses. And then I was just like, it's taken me 20 hours to do this homework assignment. That should take 2 because I can't retain data. And I'm basically like rebuilding these equations from scratch, you know, every time I go into a problem. So I had to move on, but it was interesting. But this has been a ton of fun, guys. You know, I appreciate it. You know, and Timothy, man, I've been, you know, a lot of hours enjoying kind of your covers and tracks, and I'm gonna keep using them kind of as intros and outros for my videos, and hopefully that will help kind of bring more attention to kind of the work there. But it's been fun listening.
Thank you for the support, and I'll keep writing more, and hopefully we'll have some. There's a lot of work which is still not released, and it's just finding the time to kind of get it done and get it released. So,
if I can help, if I can offer platform and help kind of get more eyes on it, please don't hesitate to kind of reach out. I know we did that with Bulldogs. I don't know if Bulldogs got more attention for you Bruins than your own channel platform, but certainly if I can use the audience of Renegade HPG to get more eyes and ears.
I'm all but sure it did, because I had like uploaded 1 video a year, and you were doing every like week or so. You had people actually paying attention.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad. But yeah, so I'd love to do that, you know, and if we can do something, you know, something more in the future. Certainly, when one of those albums, you know, comes to completion, you know, you know, ping me, let me know, and you know, I'll help let people know that it's out there in the world.
Yep.
So enjoy.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Cool. Well, thanks for listening to everybody. Thanks, Dan, for kind of co-hosting this with me and bringing your own kind of expertise into composition into my questions. But everyone, I'll throw some links down below for people to connect with Timothy and kind of listen to a lot of that work, and definitely the Bandcamp ones where you guys can download the full lossless files for A New Dawn, in addition to the Bread for War edition expansion. Check that out, download it, enjoy it, you know, and in the meantime, I'll overlay one here as the outro, and you can kind of enjoy it as we sign off today. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Dan.
All right.
We'll catch you on next episode.
Thank you.
See ya.
Awesome.
See ya.
primary objective. Successful. Proceed to dust-off zone for extraction. Sensors indicate friendly dropship has entered atmosphere. ETA dropship, 1 minute. Shutdown sequence initiated.